This episode is brought to you in part by Hindsight. Hindsight is a new science fiction novel by author Matthew Keegan. Hindsight is a time travel adventure that Tim Truax at the Nerd Room calls a brilliant tapestry of time travel and history that will leave you questioning everything, impossible to put down. Find the links to Hindsight at talkstarwars.co.uk/hindsight and order your copy today. This episode is also brought to you by the Talk Star Wars Patreon community. If you'd like to support what we do now and help us expand our programming, head to patreon.com/talkstarwars and become a patron. In return, you'll get an exclusive daily podcast, a monthly newsletter, Facebook Live sessions, priority release podcasts, and monthly prize giveaways and a whole lot more. You'll also get access to our VIP-only Facebook group. This group contains a global community of Star Wars fans that have become dear friends. So head to patreon.com/talkstarwars today and become a TSW patron. This is Talk Star Wars, the official podcast of talkstarwars.co.uk. Hello everyone, welcome back to Talk Star Wars. I'm Mark.
I'm Rob.
And I'm Paul.
And they have been those people for the past hour whilst we've been fighting Skype-shaped gremlins trying to get this thing up and running. What a nightmare. How is everybody?
Who's been fighting gremlins?
I've been fighting Skype-shaped gremlins.
Me and Rob have been waxing lyrical using high technological technologies.
I know.
Made of technology.
Yeah.
It's great when you're not hosting the thing, isn't it?
Well, no, I was hosting the thing, but yeah. I take your point.
Yeah. We've already done a separate show. It's coming out next week.
Okay. All right, let's get into things then for the week. And before we get started, we want to say a huge thank you to Derek Taylor for the donation this week. Derek used the tip jar function on the site to fire us a very generous and well-timed donation. So we really appreciate that, Derek. Thank you so much. And a huge thank you, this is not to one person now, but to two, because another one joined this evening. So a huge thank you to the legend that is Bradley W. Hall, who you may recognise from the Tumbling Sabre. This week, Bradley joined the Talk Star Wars Patreon community. So welcome, Bradley, and also welcome to Nathaniel, who does have a second name, but he didn't sign up with his second name, so I'm not sure he wants me to use it. So
maybe it's Nathan Yell.
Maybe it is Nathan Yell. I'm not going to use his second name just in case there's a reason behind that. So Nathaniel and Bradley, thank you so much for joining the Patreon community. And congratulations to you, Paul, and to Matt Parks for becoming the first Talk Star Wars Jedi Council members.
Oh, I thought you were going to say me and Matt are having a baby or something.
You might be. Cool. Maybe that's one of the perks of being a Jedi Council member. Starting a peculiar Star Wars-shaped family. So thank you, everybody, for the activity in Patreon this week. It's been a very exciting week. All right, YouTube, I think we're pretty much done with our relationship. It's not me, it's you. So it's not me, it's YouTube. We are breaking up, so there you go. We probably won't be doing much more on that platform now, unfortunately. But I think enough has been said about that. Reviews. Don't forget you can take advantage of our Ron Burgundy policy. So that means whatever you write in a 5-star review in Apple Podcasts, we'll read verbatim. So if you want to promote your podcast or your blog or your YouTube channel, that's where to do it. There's only one rule, keep it clean. We don't have any new ones this week, but that's just a polite reminder. And so we're going to jump into listener comms. We're going to rip through this tonight, boys, because we're so far behind thanks to Skype. Send your questions and comments via Twitter and Facebook, or you can send us an email. And if you attach an MP3, we'll use that as a voicemail to talkstarwarsinfo@gmail.com. And I said we'd probably start with a voicemail, but should we just jump into Jaden's email? And then we can go to the voicemail after that.
Sure.
You happy with that?
Go for it. Yeah, whatever you want to do.
Paul, do you want to take Jaden's email this week?
Okay, right. From Jaden. Hello, Jaden. How you doing, sir? Right. Hello, guys. I have a few questions for y'all this week. I wanted to get your thoughts on this idea. What if Disney were to take some of the more popular Star Wars novels, such as Lost Stars, and adapt them as movies or miniseries on the new streaming service? Could you see that happening? Also, with the backlash of The Last Jedi, do you think it was right? Do you think it was the right move for Kathleen Kennedy to hire Rian Johnson for three more movies before general audiences saw the movie in the first place? Does it bother you like it does me that Lucasfilm may have absolutely loved the direction Rian was going on with Star Wars, while so many fans that are hardcore despise it? Thanks, and have a great week. So, oh, go on then.
No, you did a breakdown.
Your sharp intake of breath tells me you're coming in.
I was just going to jump in before there was dead air. So, could Disney?
We're also having a baby.
Yeah. Could Disney adapt some existing material into films or TV series? That would certainly address the required reading issue we've all been concerned about with these this vast swathe of novelizations. Let's start with that first. So do you think they could adapt something that's already been written?
Rob, possibly. One thing they could do, I've seen this done with DC Comics, is do kind of feature-length animated movies as kind of single, as sort of one-shot animated movies, like they did with The Killing Joke last year.
Yeah.
And like they do, DC do a lot of animated movies, and actually they're considered to be quite strong. So maybe Lucasfilm could go down that sort of route with some of these stories. I think it definitely, I don't know if it solves the problem of the required reading issue. It certainly gives people more ways to take it in, which can only be a good thing.
Yes.
But I think, yeah, I mean, potentially, I reckon they could, you know, have some success with a sort of animated DC style route, you know, short, sort of an hour to an hour and a half long, just the salient story points. None of the additional kind of, you know, cut down on the additional fluff.
Would almost make a good sort of animated anthology series or something, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
A season of them, maybe sort of just over an hour each.
Mm-hmm.
Could be pretty good. Yeah, just sort of boil those storylines down.
I hate to be devil's advocate and controversial, but how does that marry up with the too much Star Wars syndrome?
I mean, it's not, it's a bit of a loophole, this, but it's not too much. It doesn't really affect it because it's not adding new stories that are kind of,
because it's adaptations. Okay.
Yeah, they're already there. No, you know. Do you know what I mean?
And they wouldn't be theatrical either. They'd be into Netflix, the streaming service,
or the equivalent of Disflix.
Yeah.
Let's just call it Dizzers on Prime.
Mixflix.
Yeah, Mixflix. Flicky Mouse.
That sounds like something off the dark side.
It really does. Yeah.
Yes, it could be. It could tick an awful lot of boxes. These things, couldn't it? It could get those stories that aren't being that aren't being consumed by some of the casual audience. It could get them in front of them.
Is Bloodline screen worthy?
Yeah,
yeah, I think so. Yeah. I think it's one of the better stories.
That'd be one that might raise my eyebrows.
Yeah, because it would. One of the things they do really well is sort of with these sort of adaptations is trim out some of the fat, so you can the bits that seem a little bit self indulgent in these novelizations move a lot a faster pace.
Well, as a visual medium, it's different, isn't it?
So. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. You can get a lot of the descriptive language that they would use in a book to set the scene. You can depict.
Exactly, yeah. Picture paints a thousand words and all that. So
exactly.
So it would be really I would be really intrigued by this concept.
Mm.
But what about the second part then? Kathleen Kennedy, was she right to hire Rian Johnson for an additional trilogy without waiting to see how the public reacted to The Last Jedi?
Yes.
You think she was wrong to do it? 100%.
No, I think she was absolutely right to do it the way she did it.
Yes, right.
100%. I think if they'd waited, you know, The fans are pretty, obviously, you know, for better or worse, the fans are going to let you know what they think. And in this case, I think it would be, the noise to signal ratio now is quite strong. But I think it would be, five times worse if they'd waited until after the movie came out to drop that news. Because everybody would have just been, oh, it's not enough for him to, you know, ruin Star Wars or whatever. Now you're going to give him more movies to ruin. I mean, I suppose if you give him different movies,
but what
it doesn't
about
really
the,
matter either way. But
what
don't
about
tell
the choice,
that.
Though, Rob? Not necessarily just the... it's not necessarily just the announcement of his involvement with another trilogy, but the actual decision to give him another trilogy.
Right, I see.
That's the crux of the question. Should Kathy have waited until the reaction to The Last Jedi before making a decision about whether or not to give him three more films?
I don't know. I don't get the sense that the film he just done is entirely relevant. I think far more important is the films he pitched to them and the stories he pitched to telling.
Absolutely.
You know, when the studio hires a director, they don't buy an old script, they buy a new one.
Yes.
They're buying the idea. So.
Yeah, they're buying the idea.
There is also that adage that you're only as strong as your last result.
Which for him was good at the time.
But don't forget, the audience is divided on this because it was done in a certain angle that they weren't used to. With the stuff he's looking at, we're not going to be used to any of it.
Mm.
So if what he's coming up with is entirely new material, then the criticism is redundant at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah?
Yeah. I think she was right to offer it to him because I think Kathy has made a steal, and I don't think she would care what the audience reaction is. She's gone with her gut. She's judged him on the script that he wrote for Last Jedi and the film he produced for The Last Jedi. And when she made a decision to engage him for three more films, it was based on her judgment and not the audience judgment. Because remember, my opinion is audience reaction isn't a barometer for quality. It's only a barometer for opinion. And
yeah, for sure.
And in the hot seat at Disney, Kathy and Bob Iger are the people that you have to impress.
That audience opinion ongoing has an effect on box office.
You think it will?
Can do, yeah.
I think the Star Wars movies are bulletproof.
I don't know if I agree to that degree. I think you're right.
Prequels.
They can weather a lot. I don't know if I agree that they're bulletproof. In the strictest sense.
And he was saying that this would surpass The Force Awakens and it hasn't touched it.
No. Who was saying that, sorry?
Any. I can't give you all their names right now, but the general
general
feeling this was going to be, you know, second, third biggest movie in history.
Yeah, I don't think we ever came down on that side because TFA is untouchable, isn't it, really, with the unusual circumstances surrounding that film's release. So there was other market forces at play that led to that sort of box office, and that's like a 10-year break for the franchise, and you know that, and there was a good 3 years of publicity leading up to this movie of anticipation where we hadn't had any Star Wars, and suddenly the gears started turning again. So that Last Jedi had never had a hope in hell of getting anywhere near that. I don't know if The Last Jedi was really as strong as somebody like myself would have wanted or predicted. I certainly didn't predict TFA levels, but I thought it was going to do more than it ended up doing. But I do think, you know, if it could weather the storm of the prequel trilogy and come back for TFA, I think that a little blip like some people being upset about The Last Jedi isn't going to damage the next movie or the next series of movies, you know?
I think one thing to keep in mind, we have discussed it before, but I don't know if we really gave it the sort of the gravitas it deserved as a possibility. Is, you know, I think there were a decent number of people who went to The Last Jedi because it was their last chance to see Carrie. And, you know, we were saying about how much of an effect is that, you know, we talk about box office and what effect it's going to have on Episode 9. We don't talk about the effect that it might have had on Episode 8 and how much that might have been bumped up by people who realized that they're not going to get another chance to see her in a film. This is their window. So I think that Episode 9, you know, if there's something that could theoretically kind of play into Episode 9 and not necessarily in the most advantageous way, I think it's the fact that it won't have that extra element to it.
Sorry.
Got you.
That's right.
Yeah.
Maybe. It's hard to say. You know, this is the thing. It's difficult to say at this point because we just don't know what they've got planned.
Well, I know that Kathy's not the sort to sort of wait to see whether or not somebody on the outside approves before she makes a decision.
No, indeed.
About which direction to take this thing, because she can't afford to start second guessing like that, because she won't be in that seat for very long if she does.
And not for nothing also, I'm sure, you know, I guarantee that if Kathy has people she needs to consult, she knows exactly who she needs to speak to. She might even have, you know, kind of consulted with George on these things, just to kind of, as a mentor figure, not so much as a decision maker, not as a stakeholder, but as a mentor, because I'm sure that... Over the years, he's been that for her.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. Without a doubt, yeah, absolutely. And the final part of Jaden's question, are we worried that Lucasfilm loved The Last Jedi when some of the audience seemed to hate it? Does it show a disparity between their tastes and ours as an audience?
Potentially, but we have the advantage as an audience of being able to turn around and say, you know, it's we've talked about it again, we've done it before. Lucasfilm, neither Lucasfilm nor the cinema goer owe each other anything.
No.
Lucasfilm owes us nothing, and we owe Lucasfilm nothing. So we can evaluate it film by film based on our own subjective tastes.
Exactly. Well said.
And Lucasfilm can do exactly the same thing, and they can gauge the reaction, and they can make decisions appropriate to that reaction. Yeah. And that might be that, you know, it might not sit well with, you know, they might look at The Last Jedi and say, okay, maybe we do need to play it safer in episode 9. And a lot of fans, I'm sure, won't like that. But at the same time, it's their choice, and it's an option they have.
Hmm. It would worry me. That would worry me more than this does.
Yeah, I wouldn't be massively happy with it by any means, but I can understand it at the very least.
Yeah, I'm less worried that Lucasfilm loved The Last Jedi and the audience seemed to hate it. Because remember, when I came out, I wasn't overly impressed. I wasn't, you know, as blown away as I wanted to be. Mm-hmm. But that happened to me with The Attack of the Clones. And Revenge of the Sith was a completely different experience for me. So
that
this whole dynamic is not completely new to me. Mm-hmm. So I know, you know, my experience with The Last Jedi at the start was problematic, but I've grown to love it, and I think other people will, much the same as they did with Empire. So even though, no, I don't think, I am not worried. I don't think Lucasfilm felt that they had a crowd pleaser out the gate. I think they knew they had something that people were going to need to work with in order to fully understand and appreciate. So, yeah, no, I'm not entirely bothered by it. Okay, we had a voicemail from Matthew Salvatore this week as well. This is what he had to say.
Hey, how's it going, guys? I have a quick theory to run by you guys this week. So, with all the talk of how J.J. Abrams is going to handle Carrie Fisher's passing, a lot of people think that the opening crawl should state something about Princess Leia and how she died. And a lot of people think that would kind of be a disrespectful way to handle the character. So I was thinking that perhaps episode 9 could include Princess Leia's funeral. With Han Solo, we were able to see Han die. And so a lot of people were able to say goodbye in that way. But we didn't see his funeral. With Princess Leia, it would be difficult for people just to have her show up in the opening crawl. And so by showing her funeral, it would be kind of a more respectful way just for everyone to have a chance to say goodbye and just really show the weight that General Leia, the weight of her death, that it really, really had an impact on the galaxy, much like Luke's. And so I was also thinking that perhaps Princess Leia's funeral can take place on Naboo. And so that way it would be very much like Padme's funeral. And this kind of goes back to what you were saying, Mark, on one of your dailies, that perhaps Kylo Ren would become fascinated with Padme. And so I was thinking that Kylo could show up to Naboo to say goodbye to Leia in his own way, kind of covertly. And while there, he could stumble upon something that linked back to Padme, maybe videos of her old speeches or something like that. And because of his obsession with Vader, he would try to connect with Padme, maybe through the Force or something. Anyway, I would love to hear what you guys think. So if that isn't a good theory, what do you think would be the best way to handle General Leia's passing? Thanks, guys, for the show. May the Force be with you.
Nice one. Thank you, Matthew. Right. What do we think of that? How should J.J. Abrams handle this Leia thing?
Who's going first?
Rob?
You can go first. I went first last time.
Paul? Okay. Well, I've always said we should say goodbye gracefully to both characters at the same time. So I have absolutely zero issue if the opening scene post-crawl was, I don't want a somber situation whatsoever, a dignified funeral in relation to information we got from the crawl, possibly. You may get the information from the crawl, but if we pan down, and obviously it's an enormous state funeral, I think we, number one, we pay Carrie Fisher tribute. Number two, we pay Princess Leia tribute at the same time. But I said this previously as well. I don't see a problem with allowing, obviously, the cast and the production crew and the fans. This is the only way that they could get involved in saying goodbye to Carrie in any particular fashion. So I say give it to them. And I think by doing it on the screen, we're paying tribute to her what she offered to the story at the same time. So do it.
Yeah. Okay. Rob?
Totally agree. I think, we were initially kind of under the impression that the Dubrovnik stuff in Last Jedi might be a funeral type thing. And we came up with a good idea between us, which was to have Leia kind of make contact surreptitiously with somebody we thought it might be anywhere from Corellia to sort of somewhere near, their sort of the new Resistance kind of de facto base. And we were saying like maybe she could get in touch with Lando, maybe she could meet somebody in the Republic and kind of work their way back into the good graces. So they could do something like that in episode 9, and that would be a good way to kind of intro into the film, is to have that sort of, have it established that, it would introduce us as well to whoever's kind of running the show in her stead. If there's new characters to sort of introduce.
I think Poe may get promotion.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Probably. Yeah, but I mean, there's got to be more than just Poe. So you might get sort of new, if there's new characters to kind of fill some of the gaps in a storyline, then maybe that we get introduced to them in that kind of environment.
Yeah.
Yeah, without a doubt, I think that sort of, if it is kind of a state funeral, you will have some of those bodies that will be present, potentially even someone like Lando, depending on...
Was our pick for the original kind of theorising on episode 8.
At the same time, it'd be very, very touching if lots and lots of actors returned in cameo roles to pay tribute as well.
Yeah, that'd be good, wouldn't it? Have like Dennis Lawson back and...
Whoever, all of them.
Yeah,
that might be cool. What about the thought of this funeral taking place on Naboo?
I don't know. That feels like a bit of a jump to me. She has, we've had no visible connection with Naboo, and they've never made any kind of connection to it in the films.
She went to Naboo in one of the books, didn't she? And she was in Theed and felt Maul's presence.
And again, that's
probably Coruscant, wouldn't it?
It's the extended storytelling stuff. It falls back into that same problem, doesn't it? You can't rely on people to know that she did that, and then people will just go, well, that makes no sense. Why would she go there?
It does depend whether, because Paul, you just mentioned Coruscant. It could be, it could depend on where the center of the New Republic is, and bear in mind.
Very true.
They're pretty much fractured at the moment, aren't they? And you can fit the entire Resistance into the hold of the Falcon. So
yeah,
they're on. This might end up being something really personal, really private.
Yeah, and that's a massive wedge. Excuse
me. Yeah, maybe we won't get the.
Maybe
the
we can get our massive wedge
funeral. Yeah,
maybe he's let himself go.
A wedge cameo. the Naboo thing I liked. That idea, because it does give us a way to sort of connect Kylo to Padme, which came off the back of someone's article, I forget where it was, about Padme, Natalie Portman, being able to step in and fill that void left by Leia, Carrie Fisher.
I think that's wishful thinking, to be honest.
No, yeah, yeah. The more...
I don't think it's easy. I don't think it's as simple as actress from, 45, 50 years past in the storyline and have her fill in. No, I don't see it.
Yeah, it wouldn't be Padme. It would be some sort of echo of Padme. I just said that. Did you hear that? I just said the E word. I've got
Of course.
Alexa sitting next to me.
I didn't catch that.
No, you're right. You just shut it.
I didn't mean for you to. Yeah. Thank you.
The adding on to this, incidentally, there's two people to bury, because from a story point of view, you've got Luke.
Yeah, but there's nothing to bury.
But there's plenty of people have nothing to bury. Rob, you still put tribute in the ground.
Yeah, I suppose so.
It could. I think it probably work quite well if we did jump forward quite a bit. I know that we don't want to sort of package this up in the opening crawl, but it could be. If you did jump forward, I'm just thinking out loud here, but if you did jump forward a little bit when the funeral is done you could have somebody going to Leia's resting place to pay their respects, and you can get it done that way without having to deal with the funeral of it all. And
maybe, two simple stones on up too, maybe.
Yeah, you allow the passage of time to sort of evolve the characters a little bit beyond the point we left them in The Last Jedi as well, because that was something that was missing between TFA and Jedi, was the characters hadn't grown in any substantial way because no time had passed.
Yeah.
So you get to take care of that element as well. I heard some of the guys, which show was it? It was a Commonwealth show. They were, I think it might have been Steve Kirk appearing on Worthy of Recognition with Kyle. They were talking about a time jump. Did you hear that one, Rob?
I didn't, no.
It's very good. And they were talking about a time jump, about sort of jumping forward maybe 5 years,
okay,
being the maximum you could do without having to make the character and make the actors up to show the passage of time. But I was listening to them and thinking, no, I think you can get away with it because it'd been nearly 5 years in production time between the first film and episode 9. So they've all aged 5 years anyway. So it's that kind of, if you jump ahead 5 years, I think you can get away with it. You could have pushed it maybe a little bit further.
Maybe.
And all of this stuff can be covered off screen and, and dealt with really sensitively in having a character, maybe even Rey, coming back after spending some time away training with Padawans or whatever, coming back and visiting Leia's resting place. Maybe she missed out on the funeral and what have you.
Maybe.
It's going to be true. I don't envy...
No.
I don't envy JJ at all. We're going to mention JJ in the news section because he made a statement on Colbert last night about where they are on the Late Show, about where they are with episode 9. So this issue has already been addressed. There is a solution in play. We just don't know it yet. So, Matthew, thank you very much for your voicemail. Chaps, have you said everything you have to say on the subject of...
Think so.
Dealing with the layer? Okay, nice one. Thank you, Matthew. All right. We got this email from Derek Taylor last week, Rob. Do you want to handle this one, mate?
I can do. I just find it just as an aside, I find it interesting that when Mark and Paul get to read emails, it's like, oh, I love you, you're so great, and I have to commit seppuku.
Yep, do it.
Yep, all right. Here we go then. Just sharpen my blade. Hello again. I apologize in advance for the length of this email. Just finished listening to episode 101 once more. That's a good discussion. Surprisingly, still so relevant. Like Rob, I've only seen the movie once. I've since have seen it twice, but that's probably true of Derek as well. But because I keep doubling back to different reviews, I feel like I've seen the movie several times. That's interesting. I get that feeling. In the 101 episode, Rob mentioned that he didn't think the movie was very smart. Maybe, but I've enjoyed puzzling over this movie more than any other Star Wars film before. For example, point one. Last week, Rob said there are several ways for the Holdo maneuver to be used. In a roundabout way, that supports the position that the movie doesn't ruin Star Wars lore, because for every idea someone comes up with, it's reasonable to assume that a counterpart on the opposite side has thought of it and devised some defenses. You can find discussions about some of these defenses online. But the real question revolves around Hux as a commander. I'm satisfied with the answer given by Mark and myself. The entire First Order suffers from incompetence and arrogance. Granted, I don't think Rian Johnson gave any thought to this issue. He just got lucky and didn't break the universe. Okay. speaking of Holdo, point two, she had a decision-making group, the people that elected her. They had a plan. Poe played no role in that plan. There is no reason to talk to him. Plus, as soon as he heard the plan, he leaked it. I don't know what he means by that, necessarily.
Well, there's been a lot of discussion online about how some of the people were saying that Poe sort of he's trying to place himself in the middle of this plot. That Leia and Holdo had devised this thing, and he wasn't a part of it, so he thought everyone was incompetent because he was kept out. But the reason they kept everybody out of their decision-making was because they thought they had a mole on the ship. They thought that's how the First Order were tracking them, and it was really because they had hyperspace tracking technology.
Right.
So they weren't telling anybody their plan. And as soon as Poe learnt about the plan from... Holdo or whoever he was, he got the information, he blurted it out straight away and derailed it, and in the end that travelled all the way back to the First Order because of what Poe was saying to Finn was overheard by Benicio del Toro and then made its way back back to general hugs.
No, hang on. But get, roll, wind back a few seconds. Mm-hmm. What did you say? That the plan got to DJ Howe?
Because Poe told Finn over the comlink, and DJ heard it, and then he sold that information to the First Order to save his skin.
Otherwise, I don't remember him having the plan details by that point, because she didn't tell anybody the plan to go to Crait, did she? I'd have to watch it again.
He discovered that they were fueling up the escape, the little transport ships, didn't he? He said, why are we running?
Right.
He thought that they were going to stay on the Radis, try and outrun the First Order, but what they hadn't told him was that they were going to abandon in the transport pods, make Planetfall on Crait, and let the First Order chase an empty ship, a ghost ship.
Right.
And as soon as Poe knew that they were going to be like heading to Crait, he told Finn, DJ overheard, DJ then had a bargaining chip when it came to saving his own skin, and sold them all out to the First Order, and then the First Order started picking off those ships one by one.
That's interesting.
I'd have known otherwise.
I need to watch it again, because my feeling was that was a hole, that DJ had just suddenly got the plan, even though Finn and Rose didn't know it. But now you've said that, that's kind of made me not 100% sure of that. So I'll have to watch it again when we get to...
it was the moment where
it's a home release.
They fire, Poe contacts him, and BB-8 fires a comlink out of the little... He's under a bin, isn't he? He fires it out to Finn,
right?
And Finn takes the call.
Right.
So it was all that. It all moves very, very quickly.
Yeah, that's probably the reason that I'm not 100% sure now, to be honest. But I say, that's interesting. I'll reserve judgment on whether that was a hole or not until I've seen it when it's on home release.
Mm-hmm.
Right, anyway, so... okay, so we've kind of dealt with that one. Number three, the symmetry of Finn and Rose. When they met, he was deserting the rebels. Rose stopped him out of a sense of duty. In Vegas, might as well call it Vegas, Finn came to face to face with DJ and the ambiguities of war, and finally chose a side. At the end, he was willing to die for the rebels. Rose stopped him out of a sense of love. I'm okay with platonic love. Rose's sister, whom she loved, committed suicide because of duty. I don't know if that's true. Rose couldn't do anything about that, but when given the chance, she does save someone she loves. These are just some of the things that make me love thinking about this movie. However, I have a question for Rob. Does the Snoke storyline disappoint you? And if so, why? I'm having a difficult time understanding this critique of the movie. Thank you for taking the time to discuss this. Derek in Denver, Colorado. P.S. I'm asking Rob because I think he's one of the more thoughtful commentators, so much so that I find myself debating with him in my head. I've playfully renamed the podcast Talk Star Wars, hosted by The Passion, The Pain, and Paul. Thanks again. So the question is for me, does the Snoke storyline disappoint you? I think I'm assuming he means the quick dispatch, right?
I think so, yeah.
It does and it doesn't. So it does in the sense that I would have liked more Snoke, but at the same time, I'm not of the opinion that the backstory needed to be covered in excessive depth. And it's also one of those things that would be quite tricky to handle in the storyline, unless they were doing like a, you know, the Deathly Hallows Part 1.
Yeah.
Where they do the little animated thing about the three brothers and the three Deathly Hallows.
Yeah.
Something where if they're going and back and telling a story like that in on Octo, maybe that might work, but it's a tricky one, I think, to explain. It wouldn't be something where, you know, she turns up in front of him in the throne room and he goes, now this is a story all about how my life got flipped, turned upside down. Yeah, exactly. You know, so I think it doesn't disappoint me because I wanted more backstory covered in the film, because I think it's, like I say, it's tricky to get the backstory in there in a way that doesn't feel forced.
Yeah.
If you pardon the expression. But I am disappointed that we didn't get more Snoke, although I did like... The problem I've got with it comes back to the problem I've got with the overall film, which is that as much as I love the way they handled Kylo Ren's development, I wish they hadn't done it at the expense of every other credible villain. Because that's the kind of feeling I took from it, is that Hux is, you know, relegated to just making stupid faces by the end, and if not for a Domino Gleeson intervention to get the sort of the tease of the blaster, that would have been his entire role in the movie, which is really quite, you know, I'm really glad he voiced that, because I think it would have been absolute hot garbage if they hadn't done that. And then Phasma, obviously, it just they seem to just be finding ways to make it more and more convoluted to bring her back. And I'm all right with them not bringing her back after episode 8, but at the same time, I would have liked a bit more, you know, I'll get you next time kind of thing. Because actually now, the other thing is, while I get the symmetry of Finn and Rose, I actually thought Finn's storyline was wasted by the fact that he didn't sacrifice himself at the end. And the reason, not the excuse, but the reason Rose gives, while I kind of get where they're coming from with the sentiment, it's one of the cringiest lines in cinema history for me. And also, you know, we're going to beat them with love. Well, let me know how that works out in episode 9 when there are 12 of you being bombarded to hell. Because reality is, in the next film, they're going to invalidate all of that logic by having a war. Because they kind of have to, don't they?
Yeah.
In order to win.
It's kind of strange, because that line you tripped over in Derek's question where you said you're not sure if that's true.
Which one am I looking at? Sorry, where was I looking?
3C.
3C.
Rose's sister, whom she loved, committed suicide because of her duty. I think what he means is, I mean, that committed suicide is a little bit on the nose, but I think what he's suggesting is that Paige saw her duty through to the end and ended up dying doing her duty because she was trying to save the people she loved.
Yeah.
The needs of the many and all that.
Yeah, I'm good with that, and I thought that was good. Mm. What I don't understand is why the same can't apply for Finn.
Because
he's actually not only choosing a side, he's found something he's not just willing to fight for, he's willing to give his life for a chance at their survival.
I think this thing with Rose is if she was in a position to have prevented Paige from dying in an effort to do her duty, she would have. And so I think we're seeing her play that scenario out with Finn, where she understands, I think, fully what he's willing to do and where he's willing to take it in order to do his duty and to save those people. He's doing precisely what she says, saving the ones you love. But she stops it because she can, and I think she would have tried to stop that from Paige. So I think we're seeing her character play out a missed opportunity. She lost Paige because she had no input.
I'll tell you what, if that's her strategy, she's rubbish at war. Because, like, you know what I mean? That, you know, if she just, Paige, don't sacrifice yourself for the greater good. All right, fine. Just the dreadnought doesn't get blown up and it's all for nothing.
Yeah.
It's like they wipe out. And actually, she's a worse strategist than Poe. And the whole point of the film is he's having to grow up.
And that's the thing, isn't it? And what we've seen in both of those no-win scenarios are through choices Poe makes. So it's like Poe makes the decision at the start that costs Paige her life, when perhaps he should have done precisely what Leia was advising and turned back and saved everybody, but he didn't. And now we saw that scenario play out again when you've got these little ships, these little beaten up ships skimming across Crait at that horrible giant cannon, and they're thinking, you know, between them, they're running through the same scenarios again. And Poe's thinking, I'm just making the same mistake over, so we've got to pull out of this.
Yeah.
I mean, he waits to make that decision until they've lost, like, most of the people they're flying with. And then Rose gets to step in and stop Finn's story playing out the way Paige's does when Poe's already pulled the ripcord on this one, you know? So there's kind of, you're having a second go at this scenario, having a second pass at it, second bite of the cherry, so to speak. It doesn't land perfectly square for me.
No,
the whole that entire dynamic, and
no, you
know, it's one of those things that I kind of just take in my stride with it. But
also, I feel like there's a logical kind of flaw with the idea that Holdo was, you know, it's almost. There's almost this kind of desperation to defend her position, even though the fact that she did all these things is what sets all these events in motion that mean they even have a chance.
What do you mean, mate?
Well, you know, if the if she doesn't, it's the sort of, you know, she sets these things off by withholds information from Poe, and you can say what you like about her reasons for doing so, and that's a perfectly reasonable kind of takeaway from it. But the fact that she does that means that he goes away and he's willing to listen to Finn and Rose's idea, and he the fact that she keeps it from him means that he keeps it from her, which means that she's not interfering in that plan because she's got her own plan, so she's carrying on with her plan and they're doing theirs. And actually, if one of them hadn't done it, the pieces wouldn't be in place at the end for them to get to Crait in the first place, because these steps wouldn't have been taken, and these two diverging points, these two diverging plans wouldn't have been followed through. So actually, I think the desire to stick up for Holdo has got a little bit out in the weeds now.
They were heading to Crait, though. Finn and Rose, they didn't have any impact on the decision to go to Crait. They were
right.
Holdo and Leia's plan was to get the fleet to Crait, and the ships that didn't make it, they abandoned ship and ended up on the Raddus, and then all of them were going to make planetfall to Crait as the Raddus and the pursuing First Order ships flew straight past. So that was always their plan, and Finn and Rose's plan didn't impact on that at all. Finn and Rose's plan really only had to address the issue of hyperspace tracking, which Holdo and Leia had interpreted the outcome of the hyperspace tracking as being a mold. So that's where the disconnect is. They thought they had a leak from within, when really it was technology from without. And if Poe had a little bit more faith in Leia and Holdo, he could have gone to them and said, look, this is the technology that's causing the problem. They would have said, oh, great, we thought you were squealing on us. This is what we're planning to do. It's because everyone was working with half the picture.
Yeah.
That it kind of fell apart. They weren't really working as a cohesive team.
But I get what you mean, but I don't think that the problem is solved by, you know, I think the point is that, you know, the end result kind of is an indirect kind of what you end up with in the end of the film is a sum of all the things that have happened before it. Mm-hmm. So all of these decisions to not tell this person that, and to do this and do that, is all building to this end situation. And so maybe you don't end up, maybe Holdo doesn't have to go to the trouble, you know, to the resort of sacrificing herself, but at the same time they also then don't destroy the Eclipse or whatever. No, the Supremacy, sorry. Mm-hmm. The Eclipse is the Legends one, isn't it?
Yeah.
So you don't end up with that resolution. You end up with, you end up with a much shorter film ultimately. But, you know, I feel like there's a desire to stand up for the movie if you really enjoy it. And that's fine. That's no bad thing. But yeah, it's becoming quite...
I see that there's some of that, but there is... You can join the dots so that it does make sense. The Holdo and Leia were heading to Crait. They were going to land on Crait. They were going to abandon ship and land on Crait. And the First Order wouldn't have known any different.
Yeah.
But Poe wasn't in the loop. So Poe made some decisions that introduced the destabilizing element. So he made the decision that he didn't trust what was being done. So he wanted them to go off and pursue away another solution, which was to cut the tether on this hyperspace tracking, which meant the trip to Canto Bight, then infiltrating the Supremacy. And that's where the information about the escape ships from the Raddus got to the First Order.
Have to go back and listen to that.
Without Poe setting that sequence of events in place, the remaining Resistance members make it to Crait safely. And then whether Holdo stays on the Raddus or not, the First Order sails straight past Crait, unaware that they've abandoned ship, after the Raddus for as long as it takes.
And the Resistance don't have a strategy because they're not sharing information with each other, because they all think each other's out to screw the other one over because nobody's talking.
Because no one's talking because they think there's a leak. They don't.
So that's not a better answer. That's not a better solution. It's just a different problem. Yeah, it's just a different problem. I don't think that, you know, blind obedience from Poe Dameron in that situation ends with a better result for the Resistance. I think it ends up with a different problem.
it's less about him not being obedient and more about him being willing to shoot from the hip, I think, and make those sort of radical loose cannon choices. Being kept in the dark, you know, that didn't help matters. Perhaps he should have been trusted. But his interference and the Kanto bite of it all is the break. That's what breaks Leia and Holdo's plan.
Yeah, but then I get what you mean, but isn't that also kind of a lesson for Holdo and Leia rather than as much as it is for Poe?
Yeah, possibly they should have listened to Poe if he'd have turned up and said, look, we know about this hyperspace tracking. That's where it would work.
But I think if even, you know, I'm trying to vocalize this. We're meant to say, so if I find it a little bit difficult to countenance that we're giving kind of Holdo a bit more rope on making a single decision that didn't necessarily have the best result, and we're willing to string Poe up because of one in the same way.
Well, it's kind of the plot that's stringing Poe up. It's not really that subjective. The decisions made by Poe broke the plan. And that was kind of whatever motivated that, whether it's hubris or his distrust of Holdo, the absence of Leia, whatever it is that caused him to go rogue, it was part of his overall development as a character, I guess. It was a lesson he had to learn in the story.
I understand that, but all I'm saying is that you just end up with a different problem of a similar magnitude. I don't think there's a good result that leads to the Resistance having a cake party at the end of episode 8.
No, I think the only outcome is that Resistance ends up on Crait, and it just buys them a little time. It doesn't. I mean, we never know where that would have gone. It probably wouldn't have ended in their supremacy's destruction because Holdo's hand wouldn't have been forced.
No, exactly. Yeah.
But it would have ended up with at least the Resistance minus Holdo being on Crait, and then it's up to Leia what she does then. And it probably would have been the same thing as calling for help and being ignored.
But we end up with the Resistance on Crait minus Holdo. So nothing changes.
Well, there's a few more ants on the ground.
Are there? By the time they get to Crait, nothing's changed at all.
Well, a lot of people died in those ships going from the Radis to the surface
and that
of Crait. That wouldn't have happened.
Oh, I see what you mean. Okay.
Yeah, that wouldn't have happened because the Resistance wouldn't have known.
No, potentially not, I guess, no. First order, you mean?
Oh, excuse me. Yep, first order. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah. I knew what you meant. It's fine.
Sure. So it is. You know, it does. This is one of those things where repeat viewing will reward because this sort of story starts to unpack itself, and you start to see the nuances around it rather than just when you go through. It's that plot that you kind of bump through and think, "Oh, hang on. Yep, well, I'm trying to keep up." But on repeat viewings, I think it starts to present a little bit more.
Maybe.
So there was an awful lot of life lost as a result of, really, I'm willing to blame DJ for grassing them up. But
that seems reasonable.
That's just me. Yeah.
I think that's fine. I think that's probably the best response is, you know, he's the, he didn't have to do that.
No.
Not really Poe's fault.
No, definitely Benicio del Toro. But what do you expect? I mean,
well, quite, you know.
Mumbles.
Money and stuff.
Yeah.
What was the other one we had? Yeah, I'm glad that Derek acknowledged the face-to-face with DJ and the ambiguities of war, because that was when I was hoping the movie would actually get more nuanced, and the opposite happened.
Yeah.
So I'm glad he acknowledged that, because that was he acknowledged that the scene happened, at least, but it's a bugbear of mine that it wasn't more impactful.
Yeah, no, we do definitely go back to the good and evil of it all by the end.
Yeah, which I think is, you know, let's say I don't mind that story. It's a classic Star Wars story. It's a hero's journey thing, but it's not a bold and starkly different mood, which is what we were sold.
I certainly think that's laying some groundwork for Solo, whether that was intentional or not. I think that's certainly what it's doing.
What is, sorry?
The whole thing about how people can play both sides. So you get the heroes mixing in that sort of underworld.
Well, they did a really good job with that with Rogue One.
Yeah.
Because they had, you know, Cassian willing to
really, really shady at the start.
Yeah, exactly. He was willing to do horrendous things for the greater good. Mm. And that was, you know, I loved that. That's one of the reasons I liked Rogue One so much, is because it tackles the notion that heroes aren't always morally, you know, morally justified. Well, they're the kind of greater cause might be morally justified, but it's all kind of momentary, contextual, and subjective.
Yeah, and they don't come out of it feeling like the hero.
No.
But
this is what wound me up about Last Jedi. I feel like they had a chance to do exactly the same thing with that to an even grander degree, and they didn't. Not only didn't take it, they went full on the opposite direction.
Yeah. And break turn.
Yeah, indeed.
Right, Paul stepped away.
Okay.
For a moment. So,
are there any other bits that we missed? Because it's a really good message.
Yeah, it was. A lot of it was thoughtful. Derek sort of laying out some of his opinions on some of the things we've spoken about.
Yeah. I mean, that's
but
cool.
Yeah,
I mean,
you can choose to hit on that postscript again if you
let me have this. I don't get a chance to do this very often. Let me have this.
Yeah.
But you know, I totally understand that. You know, a lot of these things that land for other people don't land for me, and I'm okay with that. And it's not we don't have to fall out over it. It's just one of those things about subjective. It's art, you know. I keep saying it, but it is. It's art. Thus, it's never gonna. You know, it might not land for everybody, and that's fine. Art does that. I mean, crikey, how much you know modern art does that?
Hmm.
You know, there's some people love some people love the Tate Modern. Some people love the Tate Britain. Personally, I love the latter, but at the same time, I'm not going to push for the first one to be closed down because it's not for me.
I prefer Tate and Lyle, but that's just me.
That's fair enough. I mean, you've always been that kind of sweet chap.
Well done. All right. Derek, thank you so much for wonderful email. It's it's so nice to know that, you know, previous conversations have just stimulated this conversation. And it's obviously something that Derek's been given a lot of thought to. So
really, yeah.
Awesome stuff. All right, if your email didn't get read out on this week's show, and if it is indeed on the show notes like Mike's, don't worry, we'll roll that over to next week. We are against the clock a little bit tonight, unfortunately, due to some technical difficulties. But what we're going to do now is we're going to run off to our break very quickly, and when we come back, we're going to jump into somebody's corner this week with Casey, and then do some Star Wars news. We will be right back. If you'd like to support what we do here at Talk Star Wars, then head to patreon.com/talkstarwars and become a patron. Your support will help us as we expand our programming to include further shows, and in return, you'll get access to an exclusive VIP Facebook group, a monthly prize draw, weekly Facebook live sessions, priority release podcasts, an exclusive daily podcast, and a whole lot more. Head to patreon.com/talkstarwars today and become a TSW patron.
And we're back. So you've just found out about how you can become a Talk Star Wars patron by visiting the Talk Star Wars Patreon, which is at patreon.com/talkstarwars, right?
Indeed.
Probably mentioned in that little spot. I don't know why I even mentioned it. Anyway, as is customary, after hearing about the Patreon program, it's time to visit somebody's corner, which I don't know. Why is this not, you know, we need to rethink the name if it's just going to be somebody.
Somebody's corner featuring Casey.
Yeah, exactly. It's the corner.
Just the corner.
The corner, yeah. We'll figure it out. So Casey writes as follows. Hey guys, I've recently finished watching the Star Wars Clone Wars series, and it brought up a few questions for me. I'm assuming this is not the Tartovsky one. This is the... Oh no, this is the Tartovsky one. What's the name?
No, I think this is...
Yeah, the CG one rather than
the 3D
cartoon
one. Yeah. That's Filoni's show.
Filoni's rather than Tartovsky's, yeah.
Rather than...
I heard somebody mix them up the other day, but I don't know who it was.
Yeah, it was Gendy Tartakovsky who did the micro-series.
Yeah. And then anyway, so...
Go on.
Sorry, go.
I was just going to give you a bit of context for where that where the crossover came from. There was an article that came out on the International Business Times this week that said that a character in Solo had started out in the non-canon, because Tartakovsky's is non-canon, the micro series.
Yeah.
And but the
is it not
the clan? No, it's not. And the, but the clan that they that the character belongs to in Solo,
yeah,
is from the canon Clone Wars series. So there was there was a bit of a
Okay.
So a character comes from the Gendi series, the micro series, which is non-canon, but the clan that he belongs to is from the Filoni series.
Gotcha.
Which is canon. So but none of it really makes much sense when you reread it, because the character that he is alluding to looks like it's original anyway. So
Fair enough.
We go.
Yes. Quite. Okay, so anyway, Casey writes as follows. I've recently been watching the Star Wars Clone Wars series, and it brought up a few questions for me. One thing I noticed was that R2 was around Yoda quite a bit, and at one point in the series even goes with him to Dagobah. Yet in Empire Strikes Back, when Luke and R2 go to Dagobah to meet Yoda, R2 never shows any recognition of Yoda, and during the period where Luke doesn't realize who Yoda is, R2 never says, "Hey, that's the guy we're looking for." I know the real-world explanation of this is that Empire Strikes Back was done decades before Clone Wars, but do you guys have any thoughts on how to reconcile this from an in-universe point of view? Can't wait to hear your ideas, Casey. Why didn't R2 recognize Yoda? Are we sure he didn't?
Yeah, no, well, there's no, because it's not overt, is it? There's no point in Empire Strikes Back where Yoda says, "I'm sorry, I can't help you. I don't know this guy."
Yeah.
So there could be an awful lot going on. Remember, R2 is a steel trap. He's the only droid that doesn't get a memory wipe. He's the one that remembers everything.
Mm-hmm.
So it may be that he lacks the ability to sort of join the dots and realize the significance of Luke needing to know who this guy is. But it could also be that he is sophisticated and he understands the importance that Yoda not be revealed to Luke until he's absolutely right. So
Maybe. I mean, the other possibility is that when he's banging him with the stick, when he's hitting him with the stick, so I made that sound worse than it was. When he hit him with the stick and R2's beeping and whirring, he's like, you know, if you don't shut up, I'm going to tell him.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it could be, couldn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, because he might just be sort of ranting like, "You are taking the absolute mick now. You know, like I've been willing to keep the secret for you, but this is, you know, this is too much." That sort of thing. You know?
I think I'm gonna have to watch this movie again with this in mind, because there's plenty of stuff where Luke says, "No, I'll keep it on manual," and all that sort of stuff. You know, where R2 says, "Do you want me to take over?" "No, I'm gonna take." That was in Empire, right? I'll take it. I'm going to fly manual. So maybe R2 gets the idea of where they're going and knows who they're heading to see and wants to sort of take over as much as possible, because he understands, because he's been to Dagobah, so he understands what Luke's in for.
Yeah.
So maybe he does know more. It'd be one of those things where when you rewatch the film with this, recontextualizing your experience, it might be different.
Yeah,
it's a great question and something I hadn't considered before. But it does. It depends how much you want to invest in R2. He's either he's quite wise and understands the importance of leaving this stuff up to play out the way it's going to play out. Mm. And he might have looked at Yoda and thought, "Oh, there's Yoda." And then when Yoda's all like, he thought, "Oh no, he's playing one of those games. I'll just let them get on with it because there's a reason for it." Or R2's incredibly stupid and hasn't picked up on any of it.
Entirely possible.
I'll go with the former. That will be my bet, is that he read the situation and realized he needed to just let things play out the way Yoda intended. Paul, have you stopped coughing?
Apparently not.
Stop coughing, but I can't really contribute to that conversation, can I?
Well, you don't need an understanding of the Clone Wars. It's all in the question, really, that there's history between R2 and Yoda, but why doesn't it?
Well, the layman's answer is he's a bunch of beeps and whistles. R2 is quite a cagey character, you know.
Oh yeah, yeah.
He's quite should we say inward. I think he only really gives 3PO any depth of conversation is when he wants something to go his way or he wants to be liked. And I think it's similar to Luke. But with Luke, I think he works very much on task. I think otherwise we don't know really what's going on inside that little dome.
No, it's true.
I think he sees a lot from Anakin that he kind of keeps to himself, doesn't he?
Without a doubt.
He's sort of keeping a lot of that, the darker stuff. Like, he was there on Mustafar, and it wasn't like he went running for the hills. He's kind of like a, he's kind of loyal, isn't he?
To a point. No, I'm not doubting his loyalty at all. He just doesn't tell everybody everything they need or do not need to know, in a nutshell.
That's going to be really interesting. I'm going to watch Empire as soon as possible now with this in mind and see how it works. And there must be a Family Guy scene somewhere where what's his name? What's the character that does the voice of R2?
R2, Cleveland.
Cleveland. There's got to be a point where Cleveland's sort of thinking this stuff out loud. So maybe I should go straight to the Family Guy Star Wars
show. Maybe, Maybe. It's good anyway. It's a good rule of thumb because they're funny anyway.
Yeah. Great question. Thank you, Casey. Mm. Awesome stuff. All right, we ready to get into some Star Wars news?
Why not?
I'll try and stay on track for a bit.
Yeah. Let's talk about Solo, a Star Wars Story then. So Jon Favreau, we know last week that Ron Howard outed Favreau as providing a voice for a character, an important alien character in Solo, a Star Wars Story. Well, now it looks like, Rob, you sent me this, didn't you?
Yes.
It looks like we know who Favreau is going to be playing in the movie, and I've christened this character Not Maz, simply because it's Not Maz.
It's fair.
So the little four-armed alien.
Could it be not Luke or not Han or not Leo or not Chewie or not...
Absolutely.
It could have
not
been.
Not Iron Man.
Yeah. If I'd have had numerous emails and Facebook messages from people asking if this character was Iron Man, I'd have called it Not Iron Man. But the fact is I got a few questioners asking if this character was Maz.
How many limbs has he got?
He's got four arms and two legs.
Yeah.
Okay. That's why I'm saying he's grabbing that leap with that. Okay.
Yeah, that's what he's grabbing it with. But didn't he'd have to worry.
Yeah, known to his friends as Tripod, yes. Yeah.
This is that darker direction they're going in. Star Wars after dark. Yeah,
and Ron Howard looks so sweet and innocent, doesn't he?
Yeah. This little character doesn't really fit the Favreau voice profile.
No, but it'll be synthesized beyond belief.
You know what worries me? It's only a kind of apprehension. It's not like a big sort of.
Is it keeping you awake at night?
No, by no means. That's everything else in the world. it's that he's gonna that they're gonna try and reproduce Rocket Raccoon in Guardians.
Oh yeah,
and have a sort of wisecracking techie character that's a small alien.
Hmm.
That's my. It's only a little hang up, but
that's
just
a bit broad for Star Wars.
Maybe. I don't know. But I wonder if that's the kind of, that would be the kind of thing they're going to kind of shoot for.
Mm. There was a couple of characters in Rogue One, weren't there? There was one called Pow and Biston, I think. Biston,
yeah.
When we saw the concept art for them at Celebration, I thought, oh, we're going to have a couple of aliens in with this group. And they were kind of right on the edge of frame, weren't they? Barely even had anything to do in the movie. So maybe this will be a similar thing.
I can't imagine Favreau doing an enormous amount of voice work.
No. More just like a fun cameo, I think.
I think he probably turned up for the morning, did some analogue and went home.
The songs about Biston were good though, weren't they? Like, no one's slick as Biston, no one's quick as Biston, no one's next is incredibly thick as Biston. No, is that not the one?
What copy of the soundtrack did you get?
It's a Disney thing. It had Disney on the side.
It does have Disney on it, you're right.
Yeah.
My version from iTunes was lacking that track.
Okay,
I'm thrilled to say. It's good though, nice vocal stylings.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, I think this character is going to be right on the outside edge. This would be a Bill Hader-level voice cameo. So, like, Bill Hader's in the mix there with BB-8.
Okay.
But you wouldn't know. So I imagine this is kind of that sort of thing, really.
Mm-hmm.
All right, looks like the New York Toy Fair confirmed my theory about Han and time spent on Mimban as a mud trooper.
Mm-hmm.
I did have the image around here somewhere, but I'm afraid to drop it in the chat in case everything explodes. Basically, there's two toys at New York City, at the New York Toy Fair. One was Han in Imperial uniform, the Mimban uniform, and it was caked in mud, absolutely head to toe caked in mud. And then there was a Chewbacca without the bandolier, also caked in mud.
Yeah.
So I think this shows how these characters come to be in one another's company at the start of the movie, in the cold open, I suspect, on Mimban.
They weren't wrestling, were they?
Not that I know of. I mean, I'm not going to say no, because obviously I don't know, but it could be a thing. Actually, I am going to drop the image in. Let's see if this works, guys. So that is the image of the Mimban Han and the mud-caked Chewbacca.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And this is an image that came out in an early Bresnikan EW. And I realise on an audio podcast this isn't very helpful, but...
No.
The image I've just popped in is from Mimban.
That's 2-1-B, isn't it?
That is 2-1-B.
Yep.
And this is Mud Troops on Mimban from an early Bresnikan article on Solo.
Okay.
So you can see the kind of Imperial uniforms we're looking at. They look like the AT driver. The commander uniform.
Very World War II.
And that's pretty much what Han is wearing there. So to me, it shows how Han, in the 45-second Super Bowl teaser trailer for Solo, he shows up at the Empire, doesn't he? He says, I want to be the greatest pilot in the world, or greatest pilot in the galaxy.
Yeah.
That's what he's aiming for, but instead of soaring through the stars, he ends up kind of in the mud on Mimban, about as far away from the stars as you're going to get. So I imagine that leads to him being disillusioned with the Empire when...
Yeah.
I imagine one of his peers within the Empire, Beckett, turns up and says, we're jumping ship and we need a pilot. Let's get this.
Yeah.
Let's get this going. They'll go AWOL together. That's
show on the road. Let's make it obvious. Solo is off and rolling.
why is this podcast turning into musical theatre? When did that happen?
I bet this will get the best reviews of any show in ages. You watch.
Not from me.
Yeah.
Certainly not the way it started.
Derek's going to send back a thing saying, I take it all back. He's rubbish.
Can I have my donation back, please?
He's not thoughtful. He's rubbish.
Yeah, and still you managed to bring it around to that postscript in Derek's email, didn't you?
Yeah, yeah.
Clever. All right, Solo, A Star Wars Story, toys revealed at the Toy Fair, Mud Trooper Han. Didn't we just cover that? An Imperial Hauler, Hot Wheels toys. Let me see if I can find an image of these two. Now, do you remember me saying that in the... I haven't got an image of it. In the trailer, we see Han sort of dumping his cargo and some swoop bikes are running off with it. And I said the little ship he's flying, I think, comes out the front of the Falcon. That's what's between the forks.
Right. Yeah,
not so much. Yeah, it's a great idea, but that's not the case. That ship that he's in is a Imperial Hauler. That's what he's using at that moment. Because the micro machine, not the micro machines, what did I say they were? Hot Wheels. It is exactly that ship from the trailer. And this thing, I've just put the image in. That is the front section of the new Hasbro Millennium Falcon. And it looks like it might be its own kind of drop ship. Some people are saying it could be Lando's quarters. But it might be the only thing that Lando leaves the Falcon with at the end of this movie.
Okay.
After he loses it to Han. But that thing that Han was using in the train heist, what we're presuming is the train heist section of Solo, is not the drop craft I thought it was going to be. Which is a bit of a shame, because I like that idea very much.
Yeah, I guess, you know.
But what you can see also from New York Toy Fair is this model of the Millennium Falcon that jettisons parts of the plating on the body and revealing beneath the lovely white and blue veneer the original Falcon that we know and love from A New Hope.
Oh, okay.
So if you look at that ship in the picture and you look at it for scale, the front nose section where you get the two forks are kind of revealed, the front yeah. nose section does look like kind of a big ship, almost a bit like a X-Wing fighter size craft. So it could be yeah. all that Lando ends up with.
Like the Phantom size yeah. thing from the Ghost.
Exactly.
I wonder if the original design always had this in mind.
It makes you wonder, doesn't it? It makes you wonder, but it's one of those things that works perfectly well as kind of a retcon to what we know, reframes what we already know, and just works so well, works beautifully. There's a whole bunch of really cool images coming out of New York, and I could spend time talking about it here, but without being able to share the images with people, that's Woody Harrelson's action figure. It's an audio podcast.
Very, very well done.
Very, extremely well done. I'm definitely yeah. going to pick that one up. That's high on my list of things to get from this wave, which is going to be called Wookiee Weekend.
Nice.
That is what they're doing this year instead of Force Friday. It's going to be Wookiee okay. Weekend. I think it's about the 20th of April.
Right.
So if you're free, perhaps we need to go up and haunt the corridors of Toys R Us again like we did for Force Friday 2 last year. It was a load of fun.
I'm game.
Yeah, that would be good.
What would they do if it was on a Thursday?
Well, Thor's.
Yeah, it was the Thursday last time, wasn't
Thor's.
It?
Thor Thursday. It was midnight Thursday yeah. to Friday, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. Yeah. So we recorded, then we went up there.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was good.
Yeah, it was good.
But it didn't, yeah. have it didn't have a catchy name.
No. No. Fifth Thursday.
That's a shame.
Thursday order.
Oh, well done. That's the best one, yeah.
Close enough.
All right, let's move on to Star Wars TV talk. So Star Wars Resistance is the latest Lucasfilm trademark to be filed. A gentleman whose name escapes me. No, I was hoping it would come back to me then.
Was it Chris Taylor?
No, it was someone else. It came up this morning in the Daily. But he kind of said, you know, this Star Wars Resistance trademark was registered for all the media that TV and film would cross. So comic right. books,
yeah,
novelizations. And when they do like a mobile game, what he was saying was, don't worry, this probably isn't a mobile game because they don't register the trademark to cover all those areas for mobile games.
Right.
So this sounds very much like it could be the next animated TV series. Now, you do have to jump across a few things to make the math work, but there was a job listing a while ago, we covered it a few weeks ago, for somebody, and they used the two existing animation series as a frame of reference when advertising this position in the new yeah. show. So it certainly leaves a lot of people thinking, yes, this is going to be another animated show that could very well be set between the two trilogies, the OT yeah. and the sequel trilogy. So somewhere mm-hmm. after Jedi and before The Force Awakens.
Yeah.
Considering it's the Resistance, it will probably be quite late in that period of time when could the first Order have risen.
Finish your thing.
No, that was it. Just later in the day when the First Order have returned.
Could it fill the gap between 8 and 9?
Possibly.
If we're talking the possibility of a time jump.
I don't think they'll be able to turn the show around enough to get it. No, maybe they will get it on there before the movie.
Yeah, not necessarily coming out to fill in the gaps so that you go in knowing it, but there is a option for somebody who wants to get the gaps filled.
Yeah, the only problem is that Ryan kind of reset the Resistance and turned it into the Rebellion again, didn't he, in that film?
Oh, yeah.
They dropped the Resistance stuff and it was all back to Rebels. So my feeling is definitely pre-TFA, not far enough pre-TFA, I wouldn't have thought, to get what I really want, which is a series that focuses on Hera.
Okay.
She's popped up so much recently in books, comic books, and in obviously in Rogue One.
Yeah.
That left me thinking that she needs to be the focus of another series.
Right.
With Vanessa Marshall as well attached as a talent. So I'm hoping they do it. I'm getting the impression that Lucasfilm have got a lot invested in that character.
Right.
Because she's popping up everywhere. So they obviously want to get her seen for some reason.
Yeah, for sure.
So hopefully she could feature in this. It'd be nice to see how her story wraps up after Rebels.
Yeah.
So that's that. Star Wars Resistance, the latest Lucasfilm trademark. J.J. Abrams, as I alluded to earlier, he was on The Late Show with Stephen Colbert and was talking about working on Star Wars. It was quite an entertaining little clip. I've got a short audio clip where JJ makes a nice little revelation about the current status of Episode 9. This is what those chaps had to say on that show.
The big excitement is you're doing the new Star Wars film.
Yeah.
You're doing that? You're doing Episode 9?
Episode 9, yeah.
Episode 9.
It's very exciting.
Okay. Yeah, so what can you tell us about Episode 9? I know nothing, but something. Anything.
I can.
Is there a new weapon that has more on the hilt? Are there more things coming out of the bottom? Does it rotate? Does it make julienne fries?
we have a script.
So Episode 9 has a script, and he does go on to say that they will be shooting at the end of July this year.
Okay.
So they've locked the script, which means they're addressing the issue of Leia. Hopefully, in a decent way.
Somehow, yeah.
Yeah, and it's all locked down and ready to go, ready to shoot. So that's kind of cool, isn't it? So now they're obviously scouting locations and tooling up building sets and what have you, well and truly in pre-production now with, what, 4 or 5 months to go?
I've never noticed before now how much J.J. Abrams has a slight twang of the Norm Macdonald about him.
Oh, does he?
Yeah, I've never picked up on that before, but I feel like there's a bit of a Norm Macdonald, the Canadian comedian. Yeah. He's just, like I say, it's not a massive, you know, it's not like a identical, but there's a little bit there, like a little bit of a twang that sort of reminds me of him.
Where does JJ howl from? I know
I don't know.
Isn't he? He's not Canadian.
Yeah, well, yeah, no, obviously Norm's Canadian, yeah. I don't know, you know. A puzzle. A mystery.
Wrapped inside of enigma. Well, were we all going for the same line there?
Yes.
Great minds. All right, final point of this week's news. We really do have a short show this week, don't we? Final point is something worth celebrating. So Mark Hamill is getting a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
Cool.
It's the 2,630th star to be issued. And producer of the Walk of Fame ceremonies, Anna Martinez, had this to say. She said, "Star Wars fans will be over the moon that hearing their idol, Mark Hamill, is going to be honoured with a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. We are proud to add this extraordinary actor on our historic Walk of Fame." I'm hoping, probably against all odds, that he will get a space outside Man's Chinese Theatre.
Yeah, that would be cool.
Oh, that would be good. Yeah.
It would tie nicely into the history of Star Wars.
Just wondering how much space is left there.
How much of the there's presumably other actors and George and that who've got stars already. Where are they based?
Well, the droids are outside Mans.
Okay.
They had their feet and R2's rollers, I suppose, all set in concrete outside Mans Chinese.
Okay.
But, you know, there is a crowded thing now with 2,630 stars.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if they ever remove them. I don't know if that's ever a thing.
I feel like they've done it punitively, haven't they?
Not sure.
Hollywood Walk. I'm going to look it up because I'm not sure now.
Also, look up, see if Kevin Spacey has one, because that might be a space that's going to be soon available.
hang on. One was removed for a construction project.
I know these stars have to cover the overhead, don't they? For the stars themselves. The actors and
whatever.
Yeah, they have to cover that. So maybe
have any stars been removed from the Walk of Fame? It looks like only temporarily and through vandalism and stuff.
But
you can't really do much about that, can you? You know, I mean, you can, but what I mean is that's not removal in the strictest sense.
No.
Let's see. It doesn't look like there's anything that's been that none of them have been removed.
No, and it's kind of implied by saying that he's getting the 2,630th star that they're adding, and it's not
always adding. Yeah,
yeah. Now I've been there, and I've actually seen the Walk of Fame, and it's not like they're all next to each other. So it could be that there's space between existing stars,
yeah,
that can be filled with new ones. In fact, there was a blank one when I was there. Because I took a photograph of it and I intended to Photoshop my own name into it, which I'm going to do immediately.
Obviously.
Carrie Fisher's not on it.
Is no? Harrison?
Looking now.
There is a star for Harrison Ford, but it's not him. Apparently, because Mark Hamill was telling this story on Twitter, apparently in 76, Harrison Ford was saying to him, I've got a star on the Walk of Fame, kid. And
There's two.
Oh, is there?
There's two Harrison Fords listed.
Oh, okay.
that's mental.
Yeah, no, Harrison does have one.
Oh, Harrison does, okay.
Carrie Fisher, I cannot see.
Oh, interesting.
That's a shame.
That's got to be a lock for in the near future, doesn't it, surely? Yeah. I feel like it's only a matter of time for that one.
They do struggle to get them done, though, because I know Adam West...
Her dad done it, obviously, Eddie's there.
Mm.
Yeah. I suppose that's nothing to say. Just because somebody gets announced as having one, it doesn't mean they're getting it anytime soon.
No.
Let's have a look, actually, because it might be that Carrie's not got one currently, but...
Yeah, that might happen posthumously. Mark's ceremony takes place in about a month or so. I think it's the 8th of April.
Yeah. Oh, here we go. That's 5 years, apparently.
What that it takes to get it done.
Oh, okay. That's interesting. So there's a tradition that if anybody dies and doesn't have one, there's a 5 year mourning period, essentially.
Oh, right. Okay.
Because she doesn't have one already, she can have one, but it won't be for 5 years.
Oh.
And then after that it can be done.
That's quite saddening.
Mm. It could also be that they offered it to her previously and she said no for whatever reason, because there's quite a few high profile ones that haven't said yes, because they've offered it to Prince. They offered it to Prince twice.
Really?
Yeah, and he said no.
I wonder why that was.
Presumably both times.
I don't know. I wonder if he was in some sort of contractual dispute at the time, because he had some.
He did have the high profile one with Warner Brothers, didn't
he? Yeah, he had some problems, didn't he, over the years.
Yeah, because he changed his name. I always thought the symbol thing was a pretentious artist thing. I didn't realize it had a grounding in legal kind of disputes.
And he wouldn't show his face either.
No.
He used to write the word slave on his face, didn't he, when he turned up at these things. It was a whole thing.
Yes, it was a whole thing. Hmm. Prince having whole things? I don't know. I know. So what's the world coming to, eh?
So bizarre.
Very strange.
When you go to the Man... it's not the Man Theatre, is it?
It's just the Chinese theatre, I think.
The Chinese theatre. When you go on Street View on Google, there are dozens of stars right outside. Dozens. Yeah. So I've no idea who's got the luxury of being placed there, to be completely honest.
And is the Chinese theatre right near the Kodak Theatre? I think they're right alongside where they did the award ceremonies and things.
I think it is, you know.
Because when I was there, I wanted to go. There used to be a Hamburger Hamlet opposite, and that's where George and Marcia Lucas used to meet to have dinner, and he he was mixing the 70mm audio for Star Wars, and she'd been editing like the overseas dubs or whatever, so they weren't actually in the same place at the same time, but they met up at the Hamburger Hamlet when he was starting work and she was finishing, and then they'd forgotten that the film was released.
They are on the same block.
So they were having dinner and they said, "Oh, what's all that ruckus over there?" And it was people queuing up to get in to see Star Wars. They lost track of the fact that the film had been released because they were still working on the other versions of it. And I said to Lisa when we were there, I wanted to go and have a burger in the Hamburger Hamlet, but it's long since gone.
Yeah.
Which is such a shame because that would have been lovely.
The burger would have been thrown away if it wasn't sold.
Yeah.
Long since, you know, because it's just unsafe.
Just on a plate under glass with a pickle on the side, because that was what led to the Falcon's design.
That's it, yeah.
Awesome. All right, I think we're done.
Yeah, all right.
What a weird show this week. It's got,
isn't it, though?
I had such a delay trying to get Skype to work.
And yet afterwards, it's been smooth sailing ever since. It's almost like we're professionals.
Hopefully.
Or as well, professional. How's
who,
that?
Who knows what's going to happen?
Only in attitude.
Yeah,
indeed.
True,
yeah, indeed. So. Yeah, not necessarily indeed. All right. Okay. Let's wrap this thing up then. So, thank you for listening to Talk Star Wars again this week. Thank you to our new Patreons. Thank you to our existing Patreons who have taken on a new place in the lineup. And thank you to everyone that emailed into the show. Don't worry if I didn't get to your email this week. It will roll over to next week's show notes, I promise. So you can support us by becoming a member of the TSW VIP community and heading over to patreon.com/talkstarwars and becoming a patron there. You can also leave us a 5-star review in Apple Podcasts and take advantage of that Ron Burgundy guarantee. So whatever you write in there, we will read it as long as it's clean. So if you want to have some fun with that, you can keep us on our toes. I'm unlikely to put the show into YouTube anymore. So if you happen to hear this, you're not going to find us there. I know I spoke to Vesuvi last week and also to Autobahn Kenobi, who consumed the show on YouTube. They've moved over and they're now listening to the show at StarWarsCommonwealth.com.
Excellent news.
Because if you're going to be online, you want to stream from a service, why not stream from a service that treats its creators with some respect? All right.
Who's that then?
Well, not YouTube. You can email us your questions and comments at talkstarwarsinfo@gmail.com, or you can reach out to us on one of our many social platforms, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, to name but a few. Tumblr's also in there. That said, gentlemen, where can people find you between shows?
You'll only find me in couple of little places, to be honest. You'll find me at moviescorenews.com. You'll find me on Twitter at Moviescore News, and you'll find me on Talk Star Wars called And Paul. Yeah, I've left the other realm.
Yes, you have, haven't you? Yes, indeed. Yeah,
completely now as well. Just absolutely completely.
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Rob Wade Vision, where I'm right now going to change my name to Rob the Pain Wade. Because I feel like that's just inevitable at this point, you know. But actually, I'll wait till Monday when the show gets published. That's probably funnier, isn't it?
It will make more sense.
Yeah, exactly, because I'm sure that will catch on. There'll be a trending hashtag, Rob the Pain, or whatever. People reading it will get really confused. Yeah. It's like, what, Rob the Pain? Why would you rob pain? Why would you take that from somebody? You don't want that. It's bad. Pain bad. Character building, but that's about it. So Twitter and Instagram at Rob Wade Vision. And everything I do that's not Talk Star Wars shaped is available by searching Emotionally 14 on the web.
Well done. You can find everything I do at talkstarwars.co.uk, and I'm on Twitter at Talk Star Wars. And of course, you can find everything we do as a network over at StarWarsCommonwealth.com. All the shows have their own pages there. And everyone, indeed, well, for the most part, those shows are making their way over to Blog Talk Radio as well.
Oh, right. Okay.
A mass migration, so we'll all be on one network page over on Blog Talk Radio. All right, that's us done for a week. We'll be back next week. Hopefully the show will start with a little bit more success than it did this evening. Until then, have a good week, everybody.
Take care, kids. Bye-bye.
Talk Star Wars is a proud member of the Star Wars Commonwealth Podcast Network. Find us at StarWarsCommonwealth.com alongside
The Tumbling Saber Podcast,
The Generation X-Wing Podcast,
Rogue Squadron Podcast,
The TSW Roundtable,
The Skyhoppers Podcast,
The Nerdroom Podcast,
and San Diego Sabres Radio Podcast.
Head to StarWarsCommonwealth.com. Take your first steps to a larger world.
It's a wrap.
It's a wrap.